Welcome to the Art of Charm podcast. I'm Johnny.
And I'm AJ. And we're so glad you joined us here on our weekly podcast where we share over a decade of coaching experience to teach you the social skills you didn't get in school.
And if you're a new listener, we run live in-person advanced social skills training programs here in sunny Los Angeles. And we've just started some online programs to help everyday people improve their social skills. Check us out at theartofcharm.com for more.
Now, each week on the show, we give you an insider's view of what we do by bringing you episodes full of content that we pull directly from our bootcamp program. This month, we've been exploring the science of connection, and it has been a fantastic month. We've had on fascinating guests like Michael Ventura, who's an expert on using empathy to transform your interactions with others.
And Oscar Trimboli, a specialist in teaching you how to be a better listener. But today, we're doing something different. We have an extra Monday in October, which means space for an extra episode of The Art of Charm. But we also had the opportunity to interview boxing legend Sugar Ray Leonard. And when you get an opportunity to interview somebody as legendary as Sugar Ray, well, you take that opportunity. So we're going to deviate from our regular scheduled programming.
And we're going to share that interview with you. Sugar Ray dropped by our studio to tell us a little bit about what he's working on these days and to let us pick his brain about life as a boxer and some of the most historic fights in sports history. And of course, his life outside the ring as a mere mortal just like you and me.
And like the rest of us, Sugar Ray's wins did not come without struggle, sweat, pain, and discomfort.
Exactly. If you want to move towards greatness, well, you have to get used to moving forward and being a little courageous while still feeling that fear.
Getting out of your comfort zone is a huge part of developing powerful social skills.
Johnny, we know if you listen to the show, you are driven. In fact, we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed.
Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster.
And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey.
Our hiring needs are broad in scope, and Indeed makes things easy and fast and organized. I don't know what we would do without Indeed.
Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every single day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets.
Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/charm. Just go to Indeed.com/charm right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Okay, back to our main event.
Sugar Ray Leonard is such a remarkable guy. He started boxing in 1969, and from there, well, he sort of never looked back. He kicked off a phenomenal career as an amateur on the 1976 U.S. Olympic boxing team and later transitioned into professional boxing, where he won world titles in five different weight divisions, and he fought against some of the titans of boxing like Roberto Duran and Tommy Hearns.
And he also fought against the pressures of practically becoming famous overnight at 25 years old and a personal battle with addiction.
Sugar Ray Leonard has been out of the ring for 20 years, but he's kept fighting, turning his focus towards diabetes, a disease that affects over 30 million Americans and over 1 million children, mostly in low-income communities. Sugar Ray Leonard's goal is to beat diabetes back with education and research funding through the Sugar Ray Leonard Foundation.
So we put the study guides away and decided to just riff with Sugar about finding boxing and working his way to the top of that sport.
And he's going to talk about the value of being knocked down and the power of surrounding yourself with the right people in your corner.
And we're also going to hear how Sugar Ray Leonard was one of the first boxers to orchestrate his own career without a fight promoter.
And the discipline he needed to mentally prepare for the brutality of a world championship fight.
And be sure to listen out for Sugar Ray asking AJ about his first time in the box ring and how that went.
All right, Johnny, don't make me get my gloves.
Ha! I don't need all that. Why don't we just drop right in here and talk with Sugar Ray Leonard about our half marathon training?
Yeah.
So Johnny and I are training for a half marathon. The first one.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
So that's how many miles? 13.1.
13.1.
Yeah. And what's the furthest you've run?
Well, it was 5 miles 2 months ago. So
I've done 10, but not at the speed that I wanted to. But we've been doing some heavy duty training. Well, the heavier training that either of us have ever done in our lives. And it's been so rewarding. And as much as I'm cursing up a storm while I'm in that gym, when we get out, I feel like $1 million.
I know, because you push your body beyond
I'm somewhere
limits,
where I've
right?
never been.
Yeah. Oh, I've been there.
Oh, I know you've been there. You spent most of your life
Oh, my
there.
God. Yeah. It's, you know, Muhammad Ali told me, he said, many, many years ago, he said, man, when I fought Joe Frazier the third time, it was the closest thing to death. And I like death. And I had that with Hearns and Hagler and Durant. I mean, really, you had a point that your body just like spent, and then you can't catch your breath, and also you're afraid because now your opponent is coming at you, and with one intention,
right,
to knock you. You know, there is nothing like it, in the world. You know? And that's what happened to McGregor and Mayweather.
Yeah.
Because McGregor only went 5 rounds. When he got to 7th round, because I was working with Fox, I think it was, in commentary, and the 7th round, McGregor's like this. And then Mayweather looked at me and said,
I got it. And that was the whole game that he was playing. Oh, he knew it was going to go that way.
Yeah, because you push your body to such an extreme that, I mean, there were times when I felt like, I mean, it's like death. But you have that intestinal fortitude that pushes you, and at that point you say, how bad do you want this? How bad do you want this? And you can't say, can I get back to you? And then you push yourself. That's when you know. That's what separates the men from the boys.
And that's what we want to talk about.
Okay.
That from the mental side of things too,
right,
and the physical side
the
of
physical
things.
Side, yeah.
And obviously boxing is one of the toughest, if not the toughest sport on the planet.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you jump into the toughest sport on the planet? I mean, Johnny and I, just thinking about it, are very intimidated. So
yeah,
starting
out. I mean, I am nothing like I was telling the other guys, I'm nothing like I am in the ring. I mean, I'm like non-confrontational.
Mm-hmm.
I'm shy, but sociable.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. But I mean, to have done what I did, I mean, it's just, it blows my mind. Some, my kids look at me sometimes and they look at videos and, you know, they're the same guy.
So do you feel you have an alter ego in the ring that you have to tap into?
Oh yeah. Because I knew if I was going to win or lose in the dressing room. And I look in the mirror, and if I see Sugar Ray Leonard, I could beat Mike Tyson. But if I see Ray Leonard, the civilian, I'm in fucking trouble.
Oh.
Because I'm not that, you know. I mean, it's like being 100%. Like every time. So every time you do this show, do you be 100%?
Well, we try our best. But
no, but I'm saying.
Yeah, our listeners will tell you.
Yeah. But you don't always feel like 100%, like sharp and everything. Because sometimes, but no one really knows because you'll experience and everything. So when I have those moments that I just don't feel, it's like intuition. It's like just, because sometimes I don't have to look at you over here to know I'm going to hit it. I can hit it. I know where it is. And I pop. There are times I go in the ring and I'm like, something's not right.
Mm-hmm.
I said, can we postpone this in my head? I said, can we postpone this for a while? So it's been interesting.
Is there something mentally that you were able to do or could do if you did look in the mirror and realize, oh, this is going to be a tough one. I need to talk to myself here. Or was there something that day it was just not going to happen?
It's just that moment. I mean, these moments were rare. I mean, it was like I've had 40 professional fights and 155 amateur fights. So within that period, maybe six times. You know, maybe six times. When I think back Because I can go back in time. Like when I fought Durant back in 1980, June of 1980, and when he beat me, I can go back. I can feel, I can look, I can envision him. I can smell his breath. I can go back like that and that clear. It's just amazing because those fights were so significant. You know, those fights were so incredible, man. It's, you know, because like when you get hit, it's not pain. It's not like a needle. It's like a sticking. It's like pow. It's a pow. And the only place that really hurts by hit you in the body, you can't breathe. You won't. If I hit you closer to the rib, it's a delayed reaction. You ever got hit back there?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So you know, yeah. It's just amazing, man. You know, and what happens with fighters, and although they won't tell you, because we have machismo, when you're out of the ring for more than a year or so, you lose that feeling of getting hit. I mean, because it's not natural to get hit. But if you get hit, especially in the nose, and it's like, oh, man, I'm fucked this shit. Right. You know? And so, I mean, I'm telling you guys, I talk about it because it's what it is.
Well, what's always fascinated me is it's one of the very rare professions where you train for this one day, this one match, and you're not doing like a football season. You know, up to 20 games, and then you got playoffs, basketball, 82. It's a sport where it's you and one other person in the ring, fighting your mind too.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've put all of this training in. And there are days, and of course, by no means is a half marathon that, but there are days where we're like, man, we're not hitting our goals. We're not where we should be. You question yourself.
It is. What you guys are doing and considering doing, it's true. It is. It is the same. It's the exact same thing that's taking place because you say, shit, man, come on. You know? I mean, because running that, 26 miles, is it 26 miles? 26.
Well, that's a marathon.
That's a full marathon.
I know, because I thought about it one, I contemplated one time. I said, fuck this. You know, could I do it? Not at the speed or that, but I could do it.
Right.
You know, because I push myself.
Well, one of the things that I've noticed, we're talking about earlier how we had never been in this place before training-wise, and you know exactly where we've been and where we are. To have a day that doesn't work out so well, where you know last week I was better, I must be a bit beat up, and to get down on yourself because you want to push, you want to get better that week, knowing that it's just not my day, and then to come back a week later to beat that time that you were upset about last week, to know that there is a process here and I'm at my peak or my limits that I am fighting with. And then understand that feeling is to know yourself mentally and physically that I don't think a lot of people get to experience.
You explained it so well. That's it. I mean, to push yourself beyond that limit, man, and to make your mind and your body and your heart and your balls accept, say, all right, we're going to do this together.
Yeah.
Because you can't have, you know,
going in opposite directions.
No, you can't go in opposite direction. It's like, yeah, it's like, whoa, man, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing what we can do.
So you talk about getting punched in the face. Obviously, it's one thing that we all avoid as humans, right? We are wired to avoid getting hit in the head.
Right.
Was there a moment in your life where you got hooked on boxing? You can say in your mind, this was it, where I knew I wanted to get beat up in the ring? Because for us, it's so intimidating to even think about.
No, it was like I started boxing. My first time in the ring was like 8, 9, or 10. And I'm like this. And the kid said, pop. Him on my nose. I said, okay, that's good. That's it. I quit. I just quit. I quit for 5 years. And I moved to Maryland. Put those same gloves back on. And it was like I found boxing. Boxing found me. And we found each other. That's when I tell that story, I get goosebumps, man. I tell you, it's It's just, it's an amazing process. It's a process. It's a process, you know, to, and to have come out of such, so many years of beating up the body somewhat unscathed. You know what I mean? It's a bitch.
So yeah.
It is, man, you know, but would I do it again? Absolutely. In a heartbeat, I would do it again. There is no greater feeling than the heavy hands raised, man, especially when you beat the odds. And I tell you, I would do it in a heartbeat. Do I miss it? Because until you accept that nothing else will give you pretty much that high, because you find yourself searching. And I did that with drugs and alcohol and unauthorized, stuff. So I tell you what, this is going to be my mission. And the next year, I'm going to stop drinking coffee.
Good luck with that one.
I gave myself a lot.
Well, you know, with all your achievements, it's certainly, I was telling your PR people yesterday that to have you on the show is such an honor, but we would like to be able to humanize you a bit for our audiences and to see you dependent on that coffee and that cream. That's certainly a human response right there.
Oh, yeah.
And you've had a long day. It's well-deserved coffee.
Yeah. I don't know. Well-deserved.
So it is, as Johnny was saying, a huge honor to have Sugar Ray Leonard on the show here with us today. And I know growing up that boxers were revered and still are revered as some of the biggest warriors in the modern world. And I know it's something that Johnny and I are definitely intimidated by. We've started to push ourselves a little bit physically, but the level of toughness, both physically and mentally, you need to get in the ring, to face someone else, to face your biggest fears, getting hit by someone else, oftentimes bigger than you and even more angry than you. The first question that I have is, in that moment when you're locked in, do you see the weakness in someone else and are you able then to take yourself to another level? Or is it really just fighting against all of your instincts to stay in that moment?
That's a very good question. And it's all based upon the level of competition. Naturally, when I was fighting my 15th fight, my 20th fight, and then when you move up to the Marvin Hagler's of the world, the Tommy Hearns of the world, Roberto Duran of the world, that's when you have to raise the bar. You have to be as optimistic, but sincere. You have to be sincere with yourself to achieve greatness.
To go in on that a bit, so there's all these other fights before that where at least you had wanted to be in the best shape of your life. And then to go, okay, well, if this is the next fight, how do I take it up a notch from what I've already felt was peak physical and mental condition?
You go beyond the limits. You go beyond what is expected of you. Instead of doing 100 sit-ups, you do 200 sit-ups. Not necessarily... Did I do that?
Yeah.
I didn't. Well, yes, I did. I'm sure you did that. I've done that. It's been a long time, though. But I pushed myself. And, you know, I'm glad you asked that question because that's how I became who I am. Because I always did a little bit more than the other guys. Instead of running 3 miles, I run 5 miles. Instead of training when there's 3 minute rounds and 1 minute rest, I'll do 5 minute rounds and 30 seconds rest. I would fly in new sparring partners from all over the country, and we would spar 9 rounds, 12 rounds, 15 rounds. And every 4 rounds or 5 rounds, I'll get a fresh guy. So I'm tired, but now I have to deal with this guy who's fresh. And I've learned to do that. So I was always ready for that round or that moment in that ring where, you know, majority of guys, 95% of the guys would just poof, poop out.
You know, you made mention of bringing in sparring partners. And I was just thinking about this. Obviously, there is an amount of respect that they have to come in and to spar with you. But there's also a bit of their own ego. It's like, I want to get a couple shots on this guy. I want to get a couple on sugar.
Were you my training camp?
I'd be hearing about it if he was. No.
But that's true. That is so true. In fact, check this out. It was 5 days before my fight against Marvin Hagler. One of my sparring partners hit me and nearly knocked me out.
Nearly knocked me out.
5 days before the fight. And I remember vividly getting into in the car to go back to the hotel. No one said a word. The van was quiet, but it was like deathly quiet. And I knew what they were thinking. They were saying, Ray got hit by a sparring partner and almost knocked him out. So what would Marvin Hagler do to him?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of questions in
there. Oh, yeah, so I had to prove him wrong. And that only motivated me to a degree, whereas that I was sharp.
So your brother, Roger, goaded you into boxing. And we were talking about this very briefly earlier. You say you found boxing and boxing found you. Is there a distinct memory in your mind of that moment when you felt hooked on this sport that scares the crap out of me and Johnny here?
When I broke my brother's nose. I know that. No, my brother Roger was a, you know what? He could have been a champion, but his discipline wasn't as strong as mine. And he would train hard. Then he'll go that night. He'll hang out, do his thing. But me, I just wanted to be on time, sharp, everything, and I would train. I would not eat great food. I ate what was available. But I was just more dedicated. I was more dedicated than most guys.
And you've encountered a lot of champions in your career. Is there something in your mind, you talk about discipline, is that it? Or are there other factors that separate the champions from the amateurs?
The discipline is a major point. You have to believe in yourself. And be honest with yourself. You have to use what you have. In other words, when I would fight, all the fights that I've had, I choreographed the fights in my head. I could find out what your strong points were because I would watch films of you, tapes of you, and find out your weakness and your strength. And I would concentrate on those things. And I would try to find out, and I did those things later on, you know, with my spies that I sent to training camps and to find out what was, you know, what happened, what bothered you the most. And with Hagler in particular, I found out that he would get upset when he faced guys who could box, guys who had mobility, guys who moved around the ring, guys who utilized the ring. And that would bother Hagler. So I did those things.
So it sounds like champions are also adaptable in that sense, right?
Oh, yes.
Throughout your
yes,
career, yes. Getting ready for these different fighters, you're adapting your fighting style to gain that edge.
The key is being versatile, having the ability to change up. You can't just have a plan A. You need a plan B, plan C, plan D. You got to be able to change up and be multiple. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know that whether it's sports or business or life, that's an important part. Growing personal development is about being adaptable to a changing environment. The world is changing, just like the fighters you're facing are changing.
That is so true. And, I look at life itself as being a fight. We are fighters even outside the ring. We get knocked down. Like I said, we get knocked down and you gotta do your version of role work. You gotta do all those things. And like I'll tell my kids, I say, you know, life is a fight and you have not been in a fight yet. And they look at me like I'm crazy, but they will get a taste of it eventually. We all had fights, right? Everyone's had a fight. Yeah. Everyone's got knocked down at some point in their lives. It depends on who gets up. Who right. gets up from those knockdowns?
You know, my dad has a saying, and it's something that AJ and I have said for many years now, which is, you know, and there's, and I guess it goes to speak to the sort of coddling that goes on with the younger generation, but sort of that idea where everyone should get a punch square in the face at some point to see how you handle it, take it, and be able to continue rolling. And if, without that, it's like, how do you know what you're made of?
That is so true. You know, as, and I'm not being facetious. That is true. You know, to get a taste of getting knocked down or getting hit, not physically, but just getting hit. And how do you react to that? How do you respond to a setback or get up from a knockdown, win a fight? You know, I mean, we're all gonna experience that.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Some sooner than others.
Well, we had Alex Banyan on recently, and he told us a story in interviewing you as a kid that in order to gain speed, you chase the school bus. So are there any other unusual training techniques that you used early on in your career to build that physical toughness that gets you in the ring, that allows you to outlast your opponent?
You know, that question, how can I answer this? It's intuitive. It's natural. It's like you got to want it. I mean, how bad do you want it? It's this thing that you can't really touch it. You can't, but you can feel it. I'm pointing to my head right now. It's what's up here. It's what's here in your heart. And, you know.
And what's in your fists.
And what's in your fists, yes.
That's serious, right?
Yeah. You notice my fist being balled up, eh? But it's all about the fight. Stay in the fight. Don't give up, you know. People will tell you what you can't do because they can't do it. And I always give that advice. And always dream the dream. You know, we all have dreams. And there are no shortcuts to these dreams. And you work as much as you can, as hard as you can, and you will see results.
And your next fight is diabetes. Wonderful foundation you started. How did you choose this as your next opponent?
You know, I've been asked that a number of times because my father was diabetic. I mean, my father passed away about a month or so ago, 95 years old. But he had type 2 diabetes. My friends, their kids had diabetes. One of my best friends called me one day. He said, Ray, I was just diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And this guy, I mean, was the image of success. I mean, trained hard every day, looked like $1 million. But diabetes today now, because these is called juvenile diabetes, and now it's called type 1, type 2, because you can get diabetes at any age now. It's scary. It's a fight that I've decided to take on, a fighter, I should say. And so through awareness and research, one day I want to see eradicate this disease, and I want to be a part of that.
Yeah, it's a very tough disease, even when managed.
Even when managed, exactly.
And it strikes everyone at every age.
It's the complications, and it's just a horrible disease. And this is, like I say, this has been the toughest fight of my career.
Well, considering how your career went, I'm sure you are a worthy opponent for diabetes and raising awareness around it, because I know that it's something that when you see children are suffering with it, when you see healthy adults end up with it and the complications that go along with it, it can be very tough on your loved ones and on your family.
It really can be. And that's why I'm such a fighter for this cause. And I have incredible friends who come out to support me, B. Riley and Company, my partner. We also teamed up with Children's Hospital Los Angeles to raise that awareness and help raise funds for research. This is something so special to me because it's about being in the position to give back, to acknowledge something that is so deadly. You know, this is like my child, diabetes.
When it comes to taking on a fight of this magnitude. Obviously, training for your physical fights, there's a moment of pushing yourself beyond that physical limit. Now you're taking on a much bigger fight. So getting people in your corner to help support you on this is an important mission that you're on.
Without question, without question. And then we talk about, and I'm thanks for bringing it up, but we talk about this all the time because this is something very dear to me. And, you know, it's being responsible. It's showing that what's important to me. You know, I look back when I first began this journey, and it has been a journey that when I first talked about that, I got very emotional. But in the past 9 years, we've raised close to $3 million. So again, I am a fighter outside the ring.
Right.
Without question.
And growing up as a socially anxious kid, I'm sure fame was difficult and tricky to deal with at times. Now you have an opportunity to use that fame for an amazing cause. But talk about that at the start of your career. You start racking up some wins. The spotlight is on you. How do you handle that moment?
Wow. I mean, you learn by your mistakes. But when I, after the Olympics in 1976, I turned pro at, 77. And that's where my journey began. And all of a sudden now I'm being known globally. And the fame and the fortune that comes with that, if you don't maintain perspective, if you're not grounded, if your feet are not firmly stuck on the ground, get you in trouble. And what happened with me when I retired the first time, I retired a lot of times. The first time I was like 25 and I retired because I had a partial detached retina and people were very concerned about me coming back to the ring because, you know, they felt that I could do some serious damage. But I was so unprepared, I should say, of the success that I had in a short period of time, 2 years, that I went to alcohol and drugs, and it was a whirlwind. And you know, I had good people. I had good people around me that looked out for me in my best interest, and I was able to pull myself out of that situation. And instead of hurting myself, I want to hurt diabetes. Right. I want to take away diabetes. I want to knock out diabetes. And so that's been a blessing in disguise for me.
Right.
And to physically prepare for this fight, and at your age, as great as you look, what are you doing physically nowadays to stay in shape and to keep it moving and to go on for this fight?
It's stress.
And coffee, right?
And coffee. Yeah, guys, coffee. No, you know, I work out. Yeah. I do work out. My trainer, Trent, has been with me for some time now. But I've always, years ago, I'm 62 years old now. I mean, back in my 20s, man, I always worked out a little bit. Even when I wasn't fighting, I always worked out. I took pride in working out. And I feel good. It's because when I get up in the morning to run, whether it's 2-3 miles, whatever the case may be, and work out, my day starts off, I'm productive already.
Yeah.
Right? I'm productive. And there's no greater feeling for me than to work out and just, you know, get all that stuff out of you, all that toxin out of your system. And I'm not just talking about food or whatever, but just get all those bad thoughts. Because when I work out, man, my brain's clear. My body is clear and clean, and that's awesome.
Well, it's certainly a thing to build habits, good habits that, you know, if I know for myself at this point, if I don't work out for a few days, I know what the issue is.
Exactly.
I know why I'm feeling off. And it's only a matter of time before we get back at it. AJ and I had just done some work in Chicago. And the first thing we were excited about is get back to routine, get back in the gym. And because it lets your body know and your mind know we're back to normal. It's back to right. Game time and it's back to keeping it together.
Have you guys ever tried boxing?
No. So I took a workout class that involved boxing. I don't want to say I tried boxing because I was hitting an inanimate object. I was not actually getting punched, right, which is a much different feeling. But it is physically exhausting.
It is.
I will tell you, the gloves are a lot heavier than you think. And throwing punches in a rapid succession, you're using your whole body. And talk about cardio. I was absolutely winded. My girlfriend Amy dragged me to a class, and it was full of all these beautiful women in LA, and I'm getting taped up and all excited to do a little, you know, shake and shimmy. And then we get into it, and halfway through, I was wheezing, bent over, completely winded. So I couldn't even imagine what it's like then having to deal with the onslaught of someone else looking to knock you out.
Oh, yeah. But boxing is one of the most, if not the most incredible workouts there is, because it's the body, it's the mind, it's all those things. And when I work out, I hit the bags every now and then. No one hits me back, thank God. But it's the best feeling. It's a wonderful feeling. I'm trying to articulate it, but I just can't. One day I'm gonna have you guys come to the house. And no, I'm serious.
Yeah.
And have you guys come. Yeah. And I'm gonna show you some stuff, okay?
Oh man.
We would love some.
I won't hit you. But
can we hit each other?
Yeah. Well,
we got some things to get out of our chest.
You have to sign a release on it.
Okay. No problems there. So I think honestly the most fascinating thing about all of this is the competitive drive to go back in the ring, retire, go back in the ring, get knocked down and get back up. And that mental toughness, that fortitude is something that I think we all struggle with. You know, life does knock you down. And to be honest, retirement sounds pretty nice, right? After the training that goes on, the matches you prepare for. So what was that factor that motivated you to get back in the ring so many times?
Because I wanted to win. I wanted that victory. I mean, I've had victories, but I wanted that victory. And that means Marvin Hagler. That means Tommy. Is it easy? Absolutely. No way. No way. But it's also a mindset. You know, to be optimistic, but also not take shortcuts. I was trying to regain what I had. In other words, the fame and the acknowledgement of it, beating Hagler, beating Tommy Hearns, beating Roberto Duran. There's nothing like it, guys. There's nothing like that. And once I accepted the fact, I surrendered, said, you know what? I'm gonna do something else. And it may not be that same, you know, hoopla, but when I do something outside the ring, it's just so comforting. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just so amazing.
I was curious. You had mentioned the chemical dependency that was going on after retiring. Was that going on some of those comebacks as well, that those things had to go away? And if so, what was the mental process of realizing how far you had strayed from that conditioning when that had taken its toll?
You know, I mean, my first return to the ring, my first return of many to the ring, I'm watching a boxing match and I say, I can beat him, and, you know. And then, and after a couple of drinks, you will convince him. And I knew. I remember when I saw Marvin Hagler fight this guy, Johnny Beast Mugabe, and it was like Hagler wasn't sharp. I said, so I called my partner, my business partner. I said, Mike, I can beat Hagler. He said, Ray, have you been drinking? I said, yes, but that's not the point. And he said, just wait. He said, get home, we'll talk about it. But everyone thought I was crazy when I challenged Marvin Hagler. Because Marvin Hagler was just a beast, man. He was the best. But I wanted that. I wanted it. And I trained hard. I trained for over a year. I mean, just
wow.
Right.
To get that body back in shape, to get that mind back in shape. Because again, it's not all physical. It's cerebral. You know what I mean? And I swear to God, I always tell people this. I am so
different than I was in the ring. I mean, I'm laid back. I'm not confrontational. And, you know, I don't try to punch your nose and everything. But it's been an incredible career. It's been an incredible moment in my life. And awesome, man.
And obviously with boxing, there's a lot of showmanship that goes on outside of the ring, right? Boxing craves personality.
Right.
And being someone who had social anxiety, do you feel like that alter ego that you had in the ring also carried over into those pre-fight to-dos with the media there and everyone looking for what's your next move? How are you going to get Hagler?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's hard to totally describe that feeling. And it's so contagious. It draws you back. And for me, thank God, it wasn't the money, the finances or whatever, but it was just that feeling of being in that ring against that guy and having your hands raised. Crazy, man, crazy. It's like you guys doing that marathon, right? The whole marathon, right?
Half. We're
doing a half.
I think it was a half, yeah. Maybe you'll convince us to do a whole after, but I don't know.
Same thing. It's the same mindset. You know, you just...
It's funny that you should mention that because when we were talking to our trainer about taking on this challenge, the farthest I had run at that time was 10 miles, and I did it very laid back. It was a shit time. It was like 11 minutes, 30 seconds was my average on miles. But I was just thinking, yeah, but I was fine. I could have kept going. And my trainer, it was like, that's a shit time, so we're going to get that going after it. And as we started getting into these weeks of training, it went from the idea of, oh, I'm just going to do this thing to now it is on. Like, I'm fired up for this event and I want to give it my all. And for me, I just feel so fired up. There's no word to explain it. And so
you do a mile in how long?
Right now I'm down to just below 8:30.
Yeah.
As for the 9 that I did last
recently.
Week. Yeah.
Wow. That's
so I'm fired up. For me, it's, I want to come into that under that, well, within that top 10 for my age group, that top 10%.
Yeah. That's
what I'm going. Well, I'm planning on retiring after this one. I don't think there'll be a comeback.
Is that it?
I'm looking for the taste of victory at the end. Cross the finish line, gloat a little bit if I beat Johnny and call it a day.
We figured it would be the best beer we've ever had after that marathon.
I would assume some of the best partying of your life came after those gloves were raised. I know.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
That feeling carried well outside the ring.
Okay, next question.
Been there, done that. So we'll make sure we talk about that off air. Along with that mental toughness, obviously, you know, when you're a young pup getting started in boxing, did you have a mentor or two? You've had a lot of people in your corner over the years that you could really point to that help instill that mental toughness, that edge?
The mental toughness comes from the individual. The knowledge of it, it comes from the mentor, Jenks Morton, who suggested I turn pro to make money to pay my father's hospital bills. Pepe Carrera, Dave Jacobs, I mean, Angelo Dundee. I mean, I had such good people. Mike Trainer, I had such incredible people. Ollie Dunlap, I mean, I can go on and on and on. My man Juice, I'm going to stop now because there's a lot of people that I owe so much to because they were a part of my corner.
Right.
My team. And my sponsors, I mean, there were people who loaned me money to get started. So I'm a blessed man, and I don't take it for granted.
I would love to hear some more thoughts on that because we talk about this in class and on this show all the time about how important is the peer group that you have around you through life. And I can imagine in those times of training, I'm just sure that it was very thought out of who's going to be in that room, who's going to be around you, who's going to be talking to you. Because we always say you can only rise as high as your 5 closest friends. And that's not in monetary terms. That is in quality of life.
You know, I had the best corner in the world. I just had people who cared about me, respected me, and they had the knowledge that they did. Because Mike Trainer, who was my dear friend, my attorney, my partner and everything, he said, "Ray, if you turn pro, I can have you go with Don King. I can have you go with a Poland, and these are promoters, boxing promoters." And he said, "Or you can do it yourself." He said, "Because, you know, but do you believe that you can become a world champion? Do you believe in yourself?" And I said, "Yes," without even thinking about it. I said, "Yes." And I was really one of the first or few guys who orchestrated his own career.
Wow.
But it was all on me, though. I had to produce. I had to be productive. There had to be a process. And I missed that, man. I missed those moments because my success came because I wanted success and I wanted victory. And not just in the ring, but outside the ring too. It's I almost get teary-eyed when I talk about this, but it's been an amazing journey.
And with your children and raising them, what are some of the boxing lessons that you've tried to instill in them?
There are no shortcuts in life. There's no shortcuts to success. If you don't believe in yourself, no one else will. Dream the dream, because a lot of times people let go of their dreams. If you truly believe, if you have a passion for something, go for it, you know? Go for it. And don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
I think there's a lot of influence, and certainly with all the websites and everything that's going on with technology, that everyone seems to be offering a shortcut when I think deep down we all know there really isn't. I mean, it's nothing, but if you want it, you're going to have to work for it.
You have to work for it. But then again, there's with technology and everything else, there seems to be, or there appears to be, shortcuts. But when it's all said and done, you want as much experience as you can possibly get.
And my dad would always say, "Well, you could learn it the easy way or the hard way." So, you know, it's coming.
But you're going to learn something.
Yeah, the easy way or the long way. Yeah, hard way, yeah.
And with that, I think that's what's so amazing to hear. Obviously, not a professional athlete, not a champion anyway, but I face self-doubt, and even champions face self-doubt. But it's going beyond that, whether it's the mental governor we have or the physical governor we have. And sometimes it takes a coach or a mentor to push us to that level. Sometimes it takes an opponent, right? Staring down Tommy Hearns, some of the toughest boxers in the history of boxing. Well, he can get a little extra out of you, right?
That's so true. And, you know, again, I will constantly repeat this. There are no shortcuts. And even if you took a shortcut, it's going to catch up with you eventually, because you didn't go through that experience. You didn't go through that process. So you don't know what to expect because you took that shortcut.
And obviously, boxing is a career where there are going to be setbacks. It's very difficult to go undefeated throughout your amateur and pro career. In those moments of defeat where you're picking yourself up the ground, was there something that you were telling yourself the next fight, the next training session, that would get you motivated?
And it became, I was self-motivated. I wanted to win. I wanted to be successful. You know, it's deep down inside me. And the way I think, I'm such an optimist by nature. And I know there's always a way to win. There's always a way to win. 9 times out of 10, you know, we fail sometimes, but there is a way to win. You just can't give up.
Right. Finding that way to win is where the magic is.
Finding the way to win. It is magic. I love it. I'm glad you said that. I'm gonna use that too.
Excellent. And our audience would love to help fight diabetes with you and with this cause. Where can they go to learn more about the foundation and get involved?
At SugarRayLeonard.com.
SugarRayLeonard.com.
Yes.
Learn about the foundation, and we're going to watch you knock out diabetes.
Absolutely. Maybe first round too.
That's what we're hoping for.
Take it.
Thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Thank you guys are fantastic.
Yeah, I know you got a busy schedule. It was great squeezing us in.
Thank you.
We're excited for our audience to hear this and push through their moments of defeat and frustration and those self-doubts. I know we all have them.
Don't give up.
Immerse yourself in the world's most advanced social skills training program by joining us at the Art of Charm Bootcamp. Learn why entrepreneurs, military special operations, executives, Silicon Valley engineers, and VCs trust over a decade of experience to increase their emotional intelligence. Our Los Angeles program is full of scientifically proven drills and strategies to enhance your ability to command respect, communicate effectively, and build your charisma. But don't just take my word for it.
Going through with the AOC boot camp was probably one of the best decisions I've ever made. Before the program, I struggled in dating. I was socially awkward. I was uncomfortable socially and just not confident around other people at all. Eventually, I got so tired of not being where I wanted to be socially that I decided to do something about it, and that was AOC. Johnny and AJ's lessons on everything from the fundamentals to belief restructuring were all super helpful in developing me socially. Now my confidence is significantly higher. I have much closer relationships with my friends and family. And at the end of the day, I got exactly out of the program what I wanted, which was the skills and confidence necessary to be comfortable in any social situation I get thrown into. Thank you so much, AOC.
Go to theartofcharm.com/bootcamp to learn more and apply today. Finally, get the skills to level up your career, relationships, and confidence in just 5 days. Theartofcharm.com/bootcamp. Johnny, we're out of time. That hour just raced by with Sugar Ray.
It did. And I want to remind everybody about the last part of the interview. We want to hear from you.
Right. We want to hear your stories of competition, win or loss. What did it feel like? What did you learn from getting beat down or making it through the toughest parts?
Send us your stories via email or social media, or even record yourself on your smartphone.
You could drop those off at questions@theartofcharm.com or hit us up on Instagram @theartofcharm. You can also find me there @AJ Harbinger and Johnny @AOC Johnny.
AJ, we just ran a half marathon, and yes, we've been talking about it a lot, but 13.1 miles was no picnic.
Not at all. So record your story and send it in.
And who knows, you may even hear about yourself on a future podcast.
Speaking of competition, you got to check out our 10-day challenge.
Join us for our free 10-day challenge designed to help you get out of your comfort zone and start being more social. Go to theartofcharm.com/challenge and get signed up for free.
That's theartofcharm.com/challenge. To join this free challenge, work with AOC coaches and connect with a group of like-minded people.
And we've got a quick shout out.
We love hearing from our bootcamp alum and all the amazing things that they're up to. Last week, we found out that Art of Charm alum Jake Gelhard broke the 2-hour mark in his half marathon. Way to go, Jake.
Also, if you're enjoying our show, please review us on iTunes. Head over to The Art of Charm and share your thoughts.
The reviews are great for new listeners, and they help us out a lot, too. We're always trying to improve, so we appreciate the love. The Art of Charm podcast is produced by Chris Olin with production assistance from Michael Harold.
This show is recorded at Cast Media Studios and engineered by Danny Luber and Bradley Denham.
I'm AJ.
And I'm Johnny.
Thanks for listening. Next week, we're starting a new month. Johnny, that means...
that we'll have a new theme and a bunch of new material to go with it.
So enjoy your week. We'll see you soon.